Broadcasting from the ESPN Radio Studios in Tallahassee, Florida, and in partnership with the JoeBucksFan.com Podcasting Network, you're locked in with the Scuttlebucks, Jeff Cameron, and Tom Lang. Tampa Bay Buccaneer Talk starts now. Here's ESPN Tallahassee's Jeff Cameron.
Scuttlebucks, how are you? Hopefully well. I know the Bucks are coming off a loss. Feels like a long time ago. Like longer than, I know it was earlier, but I'm saying it feels even longer than that. Like, it's been forever since we've seen the Bucks play. It hasn't been. That loss to the Patriots, 19-14 on a Thursday night with some deceiving stats for Jameis Winston, who didn't play that well. Played really well in the fourth quarter, pretty decent in the third quarter. Could have got some help from Cameron Brate dropping footballs, but he finishes with 334 and a touchdown, and you think, oh well, you know, statistically speaking, left all kinds of points on the field in that first half, couldn't get it together, just really looked like he was in awe of Tom Brady. And I believe that to be true. I remember Jameis Winston talking about Tom Brady when he's at FSU. So I think he was a little starstruck. Tom and I were texting about that, speaking of which, T. Lang is here, of course, as always, for the Scuttlebucks, and I think he was starstruck, and it was really aggravating to see. I mean, you want him to get his breath and not hyperventilate and sit in the pocket and throw a pass, and he does in the second half, and you still have a chance to win the game. But, man, if he could have got it together in that first half.
Yeah, he's the same quarterback who in the final drives of games you feel pretty comfortable with. But, I just hope that these starstruck moments, they exit his system. Because what happens in the first playoff game? Do we have to talk about that? I mean, like, let's say we make the playoffs this year.
Well, let's make the playoffs.
That'd be great. But if we make that game, do we have to talk about, is Jameis going to be nervous for the first little while? There were a lot of hands in this loss. A lot of hands.
Tons.
Unfortunately, in the first half, Jameis was at the lead of the pack, I would say.
Like the hamburger helper hand.
Right, exactly.
His hand was huge.
Yes, it was.
Yeah. It was the biggest of the hands in the first half. And then a lot of other people decided to chip on into the losing effort in the second half. And then he decided to have normal size hands. Yeah, it was really weird. Because, and by the way, we will ask the question, if the Bucks make the playoffs, A, it'll be cool to say the Bucks are in the playoffs, and B, it's absolutely normal for people making their debut in the playoffs to be nervous, and he will be, period. You know, he just will be. And now, it's also up to coaches to understand that it means a lot to him. He's passionate, and sometimes it gets in the way. And so, can you do some things to write it earlier? Can you get him... it's okay. It's not illegal to call some short passes, some easy things to get a quarterback some comfort. But look, the other thing I saw, and I hate talking about another team because this is the Scuttlebucks, but we're football fans, all of us. If you're listening to this, you're a diehard football fan, and you watch every week, and you're aware of the league, and so you get it. But, man, when you have a young quarterback who's already proven that he's a bona fide good starting quarterback in the National Football League, likely on his way to great, but he has a ways to go till he is great. At least not consistently, he's not great. And then across from you, you see arguably the GOAT. You see the first ballot Hall of Famer instantly. And you watch the throws and the composure and the knowledge. And Tom Brady, man, making throws out here at that age that are insane. That I don't know that... other than Aaron Rodgers, anybody else in the league has.
Yeah, he makes three or four throws in this game where you go, wow.
That's ridiculous.
Just incredible. But at the end of the day, and I think the reason, almost a week later, I'm still a little frustrated, is they only scored 19 points. The defense turned in largely a really good effort. I mean, I think
sure
at halftime,
did. Sure did.
28 on defense. You're quite frustrated with Vernon Hargraves, and rightly so. Yes, you should be. But overall, the game plan was executed. The defensive pass rush was there. The interior of the defensive line came out firing again. There's a lot to like about the game plan and executing the game plan. Of course, I'd like to look more dominant as we do it, not let New England move up and down the field. But hey, listen, with all the injuries that the Bucs have and the lack of talent, I think on that side of the ball, if you really look top to bottom on the two deep, it's not exactly like they're a top 10, top 12 defense in the NFL. They're working with a little bit less, especially at the defensive
sure,
end position.
Without question.
Healthy or not. But that's the game plan. The game plan was to contain, and they did that. So, again, this was a game to be had. I don't think either team won this game. That happens far too often in the NFL. I wish the Bucs would have taken this one. Unfortunately, here you are. You have a shot, 20-30-yard line. As time expires, you come up empty, and you're looking at 2-2, which is not the end of the world at all. But you want to see Tampa take the next step and take the bull by the horns. The good thing is that there's 12 more games to play, yeah, and they still have room to grow and time to grow.
And they're where I thought they'd be at 2-2. And the other thing is, we can't overlook this. I mean, my God, their kicker couldn't make a field goal. I mean, maybe you're not chasing touchdowns here at the end if your guy can make a field goal or two. I mean, it was embarrassing. So, once again, with kicking woes, it's a broken record, and we're so tired of it. And it affects play calling. It affects every aspect of your team. I mean, obviously, you talk about deflating. Not getting points in situations where you should have points, 31 yards.
Sure.
That's devastating. You're always chasing at that point. There's a sense of desperation at that point. People try to do more than they should at that point.
But I'm just glad that we talked about the other parts of the game before we got to the kicker.
Sure.
Because, of course, the kicker is huge
in
this
game. It's obvious, right.
And that's why Patrick Murray is now your kicker, and it's not Nick Folk anymore.
That's right. And hopefully we're done with the roulette at kicker.
But at the same time, there's a lot of moving parts that are going to translate from week to week that we need to continue to watch week to week, and it's not just the kicker.
Oh, God, no. The kicker's the kicker. If you're missing kicks, you're missing kicks. It doesn't require analysis. He's just missing kicks.
Mm-hmm.
Got to get somebody in here who can make kicks. There's your analysis. Get the ass can't make kicks out of here and get the one that can in.
Right.
There it is. That's it. In a nutshell. We're done.
Yeah.
You know, but you're right. They're not executing in certain other areas that are fundamental to the game, and we'll be with you week to week to week. And those are areas of improvement that we could and should see.
Yeah, your quarterback lets you down in the first half, and then your play caller slash head coach lets you down in the second half. I mean, I would have thought after the drive is capped, where Jameis rolls to his right, hits DeSean Jackson on the third down, he gets the tippy toes in, first down.
It's a great throw.
Then Doug Martin takes off the rest of the drive and scores you a touchdown. I would have thought from there on, we might have been a run-first offense behind the horse who's fresh.
And looking good right off the bat.
Yeah. As we said he would mm-hmm. in the preseason. We'll see how he holds up in December, but we knew he'd come. The way he looked in preseason.
Three fewer games under his belt, he might look good in December.
Exactly. I would have thought we would have been a little bit more run first from that point on. But
well, Tom, let's get this out there to our Scuttlebucks listeners so that people know where we're coming from every week. We're suspect about Dirk Koetter. I'm just going to say it.
Yeah.
There's no sense in pussyfooting around here. I think he's suspect. And as a play caller, as a guy in the moment that needs to have the huevos to do what needs to be done, I think he clams up. I think he gets a little bit fan-like and nervous, and I don't need it. I've seen too many moments of it. Specifically, we can go back to 4 or 5 games a year ago. We didn't have the Scuttlebucks then. If we had, you would have heard me express this then. Tom and I would do this. We do this anyhow, week to week. Either we're watching a game together or we're texting back and forth during it, where one of us is sending a text to the other almost within, it's like clockwork, within certainly a first half of a game. There's a moment where you text the pictures of the two eyes.
And yeah, exactly.
And then I just
write the emoji,
the emoji of the two eyes, and I write Dirk Koetter next to it.
Yeah.
He's either sending that to me or I'm sending that to him every week. And we're not guys that think blame the coach for everything. We're not guys that say fire the coach for everything. We're not guys that panic. You know, listen, the other team's getting paid too. The other team's coach too. The other team's trying too. I got it. But man, the moments where it's suspect. It's suspect, and it's frustrating because you see other times where you go, oh, okay, there it is. He's in a rhythm. He's starting to feel what this game is, but he didn't in this one.
No, in the second half especially, I think the number one decision that I questioned was not kicking it deep, you know, with a little bit more than 2 minutes to play in a timeout. If you just watch the flow of the game, I mean, listen, what segment is giving you your best chance to win the football game? It's your defensive front. They're getting pressure on Tom Brady. They're stopping the traditional runs, largely. So what's going to happen? On first down, after you kick it deep and kick it through the end zone so they can't return it and get it to the two-minute warning, you have one timeout left. Well, they're going to run. So that way you're looking at second and hopefully 7 or 8 if you're thinking about succeeding, because as a coach, you don't think about failure. That's the other thing with Dirk. I think he thinks about failure too much when he makes key decisions.
Well, that's an important point to make, yes.
You've got to accept as you're drawing something out.
It's not going to work.
And it's not going to work, but you've got to expect your players to succeed. And so you're looking at 2nd and 8, and it's, or we call a timeout like we did. So let's say there's 2 or 3. The Patriots will alertly do what they did, even though it was an incomplete pass. It's a free play. You don't have to run the ball. The 2-minute warning is there. That's a nice play call. So you're setting up for what? A third for the game. Third down for the game. Do you get a stop or do you not get a stop? And in that situation, if you're down merely 2 points and you get the stop. Well, guess what? I got you, Nick Folk. He's not the strongest guy on your roster at that very moment you're making the
but
decision.
But you trot him out there and you hope.
But you're 30, 40 yards away.
Yeah.
You're a few first downs away
yeah.
from kicking a field goal to do exactly what you did last week against the Giants, which is win the football game. Instead, as a man who talks about percentages, you kick an onside kick. Where's the percentages in that?
No, I agree with you, and you're going down the path for that one scenario. I thought there were several others.
There are
not
others.
Sticking with the running game for starters when you had established firmly that you were going to be able to run the football on this day, and when your quarterback was shaky in the first half, not sticking with that was frustrating. I will say this. If we're going to give kudos, there are moments as you watch this game where the Bucs are the smarter team.
Yeah. Oh, the special teams
mistakes.
Oh, my
goodness gracious. I never thought I'd say that about a Bill Belichick coach team. One juncture early in the third quarter, I think the Patriots have 11 penalties already, mm-hmm. and the Bucs have just a handful.
The two roughing the passers before the end of the half.
It's crazy. If the Bucs were doing that, we would be talking about what kind of asinine nonsense is this. It was crazy to see. I really was. This game, in a lot of ways, was bizarro world. It was upside down. We thought it would be really high scoring. It's not really high scoring. We thought that both teams would be up in well over the 20s. It doesn't happen. Then the Patriots are committing dumb penalties back to back, and then time and again making mistakes to give the ball back and give opportunities to the Bucs where really they could have put this game away. New England could have in the third quarter.
Yes, they could have, and they were starting to drive the length of the field, and there wasn't much resistance. But I mean, you got to give the defense credit for hanging tough and making plays when it had to make plays, holding to three. You know what I mean?
Sure.
Three, not seven, is a mantra on the Jeff Cameron Show, which you can find on ESPNTallahassee.com weekdays 3 to 6 and on demand, all that stuff. But 3-7 was the mantra for this game. Listen, I don't care how many scores they get, how many sevens do they get?
Right.
And the Patriots didn't get a whole lot of sevens. But if you want to continue down the line, there's a couple of things that really irk me in that game from a management situation. 3rd and 2, you call the run to Doug Martin. I have no problem with that call if you're going for it on fourth down. I get that there's a breeze coming at you pretty hard, I guess, that night where Nick Folk misses the 56-yarder to end the first half. But the feedback of that kick, the way he missed it.
Why do you give him a 49-yard field goal?
No.
There's no chance. No chance. Everybody in the stadium knew that was not going
to
be made.
You call that play to Doug Martin.
To set up another run.
Knowing that you have a fourth down play.
Action.
Exactly right.
I completely agree.
You know what? After a while, I'm done with the DeSean Jackson, Jameis Winston chemistry issues. You know how you get DeSean Jackson happy? You get him the football early in the game. So here's what you do.
The slant that you run late is ideal call for the first quarter.
If Jameis can't hit him deep, which I need Jameis to do eventually,
sure.
with consistency,
sure.
you've got to hit those freaking deep balls. There's only one or two chances in every pro game. And guess what? If you do it coming out the gate in the second half, it's 14-13 bucks. We're kicking back off to New England, and that place is going crazy because it's all of a sudden everybody's feeling like they've arrived. Here we go.
Right.
We're about to take one. Here you come, champs. What you got? Instead, it's incomplete, and the game plays out the way the game plays out. But if he can't do that down the field with consistency, then get DeSean the ball underneath more consistently. He makes one man miss, and it's a 30-yard play. So, all at once, there are good moments across the board in the first quartet of the season, the first quarter of the season. But at the same time, there are some things that will concern you moving forward. We got 12 games to get a whole hell of a lot better on offense, defense, obviously in the kicking game, and then from a coaching staff standpoint, too.
There's good news. I mean, I think a lot of that can be done, and we've done the vast majority of this 2-2 start, which is, by definition, average, without Doug Martin. So welcome back, Doug Martin. He's going to be a key cog to finding the balance you need on offense to set some things up down the field. Jameis is going to get opportunities to make the throws that he's been incapable of making so far this year down the field to DeSean, because they're going to be able to throw off a play action now that they're able to run the football with a legitimate NFL running back in Doug Martin. And I'm looking forward to it. By the way, Jameis has on occasion hit the deep ball to Mike Evans. He's able to hit the 20 to 25-yard route to tight ends all the time. Just can't get on the same page with DeSean Jackson. So one thing I want us to be careful about as play callers and just really in terms of the way you view this offense, we don't need to force this, because you'll start to get into the head of a young quarterback. And it'd be nice. I want to hit those throws. If they're there, you got to hit them. I got you. But, man, don't force feed it because you're worried that Deshaun's going to begin to pout. Don't do that.
Which is why you get him involved, you know, quickly,
right.
Early.
Design just give him the ball. He just wants the ball in his hands.
Forget the checks at the line early in the game. Get the ball to him. Right. But I think it's already in his head. I think that's something that happened before the season started because there was inconsistency.
There was talk about it in practice.
Well, there's inconsistency on that pass in his first 2 years. So when you bring in Deshaun, the idea is, well, here's a guy you can't overthrow. And that was a talking point preseason. I mean, Dirk and Jameis have both talked about it.
Yeah, he can't throw far enough, and then he's outthrown him now.
Right, exactly. So I think it's in his head because that's a throw he makes in his sleep
in
college.
By the way, I will tell you this. I much rather see that overthrown than underthrown. The underthrow against Minnesota that ends up in the pick, that throw is much more aggravating to me than the throw where he misses him down the sideline here because he's a little long. Take your chances on overthrowing him. Let that man run underneath the ball. You can never underthrow him, Jameis. That's the one where I get – that's when you get mad, that's when I get mad. You underthrow him, that pisses me off. It shouldn't happen. I'll live – I mean, I want you to hit the pass, but I'll live with an overthrow. Okay, because we can fix that. Also, those don't tend to get picked.
Right. Well, so, underthrows on deep balls tend to what? Get returned for a good 10 minimum yards.
Hey, Mike Smith's talking about something that I want us to talk about as well on the Scuttle Bucks because this has me angrier than anything else – currently happening with the football team not named Nick Folk or I don't want to go down that road again and start kicking people that aren't even
you're
here.
You're going to go to the head coach.
but here you go. Let's just go here. I don't need my first round corner playing 15 yards off the ball every time it snapped, especially not on 3rd and 5, especially not on 2nd and 7. I mean, and yet every time I look up Vernon Hargraves, you can't find him. I mean, if you're watching the game on TV, he's nowhere on your screen because he plays off coverage every time. You covered all the time, buddy. That's right. Fan Retreat. Scuttlebucks. Yeah.
Work it in.
Presented by Fan Retreat. Always. FanRetreat.com. Great Florida company, kids.
That they are.
Here in the state of Florida, that's a good thing. So if you want a one-stop shop, purchase an event ticket, travel, things that are in and around the area you're going. You can find all that on fanretreat.com. Buy Bucks tickets. Could be another team. Whatever you want.
My favorite part was learning last week as we learned the genesis of fanretreat.com. It's because someone got screwed. The CEO of the company got screwed.
Yeah.
Out of real seats.
Well, a guy had to sit with the enemy.
He had to sit with the enemy, yeah. And he bought tickets to the wrong game. He says, this should be much easier. I shouldn't have to worry about it.
It's so fanretreat.com, buddy.
Now we're doing it our own damn selves.
Compared to SeatGeek or StubHub, you'll find 95% of fanretreat.com tickets are cheaper. Fan Retreat, local company, less overhead. They pass on the savings to you. That's right. Joe Bucks fan. You find out about that. Go type that in, fanretreat.com. You're saving money. All right. Hey, Mike Smith talking about Hargraves off coverage now.
Like, it seems like Vernon is playing a lot of soft coverages off the line of scrimmage. Is that by design, or is that, as some have suggested, that he's maybe just not playing with the confidence that he should?
No, I don't think it's by design in terms of what we're asking our players to do. We give our guys a little bit of flexibility in terms of where they feel comfortable. There's ranges in where we would like them, you know, to line up, and you know, we don't say, hey, we want you to be right here in this, you know, in this specific defense. We do give them because based on their skill set, you know, Brent Grimes is going to play it a little bit different than Vernon Hargraves. And again, I think Vernon, he's had a lot of snaps last year, and I think he continues to learn. And like I said, he gets a lot of opportunities because of who we have over on the other side.
Yeah, because they're not going to challenge Brent Grimes, and hopefully he stays healthy. But my goodness, the 34-year-old corner looking as good as he does ought to serve as inspiration for Vernon Hargraves not to be as young as he is playing a million miles off the ball.
There's a reason I'm concerned, and then there's a reason I'd say, all right, let's not talk in absolutes about this just yet, because there's a lot of times when pre-snap the Bucks are giving a quarters look or cover four look pre-snap where clearly the two deep safeties are going to be playing deep and then both corners are back. We're trying to funnel things underneath, keep everything in front of us. It's the other plays. I can't pre-snap. If I don't know what Coach Smith calls, then I can't tell you what percentage is what. But I can tell you that the Bucks play that shell over the top an awful lot, especially when Brent Grimes was out. But they played an awful lot. The way he triggers on the run tells me that he has the instincts to come up and make a tackle.
Well, he loves to come up against the run. He does it in a superior manner to most corners, and he did it great at University of Florida as well.
Right. Well, he also got up and jammed a receiver at the University of Florida.
Well, they weren't NFL receivers.
And we get back to this point. Has he been burned in practice or burned in game film when we're not watching and the ball goes somewhere else and he's not the target often enough that he's too afraid? That is an absolute possibility, given the answer that Mike Smith gives. He's got an out to take there and say, well, that's the way we scheme it and protect his player.
No, he's not going to do that, though.
He's telling you it's the player's discretion. Now, at what point does one member of the coaching staff say, hey, if you get burned, you get burned? But let's come up and see if we can stop a play that's right in front of us, especially on a third down to get off the field or something like that.
There are some good things with this defense growing. They got pressure in this game that was very exciting. Kendall Beckwith continues to really, really open eyes. Justin Evans, the young safety. Here's Mike Smith talking about Justin Evans.
It doesn't surprise me. I said last week, I think he'll perform like our linebacker Kendall's performed, and I think he played very well for his first extended action, to have the pick early in the game. That was a huge play in the football game. Got his hand on two other balls. He's a very good football player, and he just needs reps, and he needs to see it. And I think he's going to be a guy that's going to help us in the short term and the long term. He's a guy that can play both strong and free safety, and he's getting comfortable back there. And he's probably no disrespect to any of the other guys, he's probably the most athletic safety that we have.
Well, that's good news, and the Bucks got to get healthy. And at the time that we do the Scuttle Bucks, we're unable to see the announcement of the inactives. So it's just so you know, we're not ignoring certain nuggets. But imagine what this defense, which is getting better in areas, has an opportunity to be if you can get back Quan. I mean, he and David. You know, you get those two guys back. You look like a very different football team.
Well, yeah, that plus if you could add a T.J. Ward to the back end, too. And the important nugget there, and I don't know that that means he's ready yet, Justin Evans we're talking about, and it's, you know, one full game. There's going to be a learning curve for this kid, so let's not force upon him expectations that he's going to be an all-pro player right out the gate, because he certainly did miss a couple of plays last Thursday. But I thought the important point that Mike Smith made is that he can play strong or free safety.
Yeah,
okay, versatility means that we can get the best players on the field.
Are you saying you don't want to see Chris Conte out there anymore?
I'm saying...
Are you maybe inferring that perhaps there's a better player than Conte?
What I'm telling you is that if you want T.J. Ward to come up and run support and you want to let this kid roam the field and this coordinator...
It might be a nice combination.
Who I gather is telling you the truth. There are a lot of coaches who spin things when they're available to the media, and I don't think Mike Smith is one of those. I think Mike Smith is willing to tell you a little something because the film doesn't lie and everybody gets to see the film every week in the NFL. So you can't lie and you can't hide. So if this kid is capable of playing over the top, you didn't just upgrade one position, you've upgraded two positions.
Lee DeKemper, JoeBucksFan.com, joins us next.
Ain't nobody gonna steal my brand new guru.
Sieging the Bay, one topic at a time. The Scuttlebucks return now on JoeBucksFan.com.
Welcome back, Scuttlebucks. Yeah, let's do this thing. Let's talk to our friend Lee DeKemper from JoeBucksFan.com. He joins us every week on the program. Hey, Lee, how are you, buddy?
All right, Jeff. I hope you're doing better, recovering from frustrating Bucks loss.
Yeah, you know, I'm. It's funny that Bucks loss didn't play out the way that we thought it would. Like, I had assumed a Bucks loss. I don't know how... You know, I don't know how many people did, but I did. But I thought it would look a lot different. And then when it didn't, it kind of played with your emotions because you recognized there were opportunities and opportunities to win the game that you had already in your mind kind of conceded. And I also didn't think the Bucs defense would get so much pressure on Tom Brady, et cetera, and yet we're watching it happen. And so I thought, man, the NFL, A, is unpredictable, and B, in doing that, my expectations shifted as the game went along. And so maybe the pain of losing that game was a little greater than I had anticipated, since I already thought they'd lose, but not the way that they did, if that makes any sense whatsoever.
Not only does it make sense, I think you hit the nail on the head when you said it played with your emotions. I'm like you. I did not expect the Bucks to be even close. I predicted like a double-digit point loss, pushing 20. I think I predicted 42-21 or 42-24, something in that range. And I thought Brady was going to just slice apart the Bucs defense. And then when you see guys like Justin Evans, a rookie, pick off Brady, which was the first time in forever he threw a pick, when you see them force the Patriots into turnovers, and then you see how they didn't do anything with it. You know, they basically never cashed those chips in, and the game's in there. The game could be had, and that played with your emotions. At least I didn't expect it. I gather from what you're saying, you didn't expect it to be close. And then when it was close, the Bucs just every time that game was handed to them on a silver platter multiple times, and each time the Bucs kicked the platter out of the hands of the waiter.
Very frustrating game because there's enough blame to go around, and whether it's certain aspects of play calling, whether it's Jameis' terrible first half where he doesn't do anything and blows opportunities, whether it's Cameron Brate normally sure-handed dropping passes, whether you can go players, you can go personnel groupings, you can go coaching, you can go just a number of things that didn't allow for that. Well, obviously, kicking. so many aspects.
Another kick in the fill in the blank. Wasn't
yeah,
it?
I mean, you obviously, so between the special teams with all the missed kicks, and then Jameis in the first half in particular, Cameron Brate, and then, you know, I think, too, I continue to get frustrated with Hargraves at times, who's really good in run support, mm-hmm. but you're a corner. I need you to cover people. And I just, there's so many things about the game. But here's what I also thought. I thought at the start of the season, if the Bucs could go 2-2 while they were weathering the storm without having a professional running back, a real honest-to-goodness NFL running back that was getting snaps for them. Now, I know, obviously, Martin came back and looked good in this. But now, you know, you got him back in the fold, and you can tell the difference it makes. I thought if they could be 2-2, they were set up to still have an opportunity to be a playoff football team. So why don't you give me the collective thoughts through four?
Well, I absolutely agree with you, and I told people that, and I wrote that. If anybody would have said, after the Patriots game, the Bucs will only have two losses, you'd be content. You'd be okay with that.
Yeah, you're not jumping around and cheering, but you're okay. You're all right.
Yeah. You're not panicking, but you're not throwing parties either. You're content. Like, okay, you know, it's still possible, still a reality. Overall, four games, defense has to get better. Pass rush has to get better, though we saw good signs of that against Brady. We saw very good signs of that against Brady, specifically interior rush, interior pass rush. Great signs. McCoy got in there. Clinton McDonald got in there. That was good signs. However, and this leads to something that's very current, just happened about 45 minutes ago. You know, Vernon Hargraves, we're all seeing Hargraves. He's playing people as if he's facing Jerry Rice every week. Now, Mike Smith, the Bucs defensive coordinator this afternoon, was asked point blank, is Hargraves playing that soft off the receivers on purpose? And Mike Smith said, no, that's not by design, but in their defense, they give the cornerbacks liberty. Okay, play off the receiver however you feel comfortable. You think you can play, if you think you can make a play by playing soft, then do it. If you think you can make a play by jamming a guy at a receiver, then do it. Whatever makes you feel comfortable that you can make a play, do it. And apparently, for whatever reason, Hargraves feels comfortable doing that. Now, that leads to the next question. Why doesn't some of the coaches, or at least one coach, pull him aside and say, Vernon, no more of that? That's another question that has yet to be answered. But Hargraves, you know, he's a first-round pick, and he came out of college with decent ball skills, decent coverage skills, and if anything, he's regressed. Now, granted, he's going to get exposed because on the other side is old Brent Grimes. Not too many quarterbacks with an IQ above 70 are going to test Brent Grimes more than a few times in a game. You're going to go after Hargraves. And so Hargraves, you could argue it's time for him to man up. It's time for him to grow a pair and like, look, man, this is getting done. You might want to try something different because quarterbacks are not going to leave you alone unless you give them a reason for them leaving you alone.
It's an opportunity. I mean, I think he has to look at it as an opportunity to prove himself. Yeah. And you're right. I mean, I'm surprised that it's been allowed to happen time and again. I mean, Tom and I are up here watching the games together sometimes or texting back and forth while we watch the games going, where the hell is Hargraves on my screen? Why is he 25 yards off the ball here? Especially when it's like 3rd and 5 and a guy runs 6 yards and turns around. I'm sitting there going, yep. Well, my man, what did you think was going to happen there?
Yep. Yeah, like Lovie Smith came back in the building or something.
It's crazy. And I don't think Hargraves can ever be an elite corner. I don't think he'll live up to where he was drafted, but I need him to be a starting corner. That is to say, he has to play to the level of the average NFL corner. You got to at least give me that. You know how they do wins above replacement in baseball? I just need you to be even at zero. You can't be a minus for me. And right now, he's a minus.
Yes. You know, unfortunately, he's not living up to where he was drafted, and you have to be honest. Looking, you know, if you want to look forward to next year, and frankly, Jason Light really can't afford to do that because he doesn't have a contract for next year yet. If you're going to look forward to next year, is he going to be a starter? Is he an answer? Do you re-sign Grimes? Do you tap it in the free agent pool again? Do you trade Hargrave? You know, that right now, they thought that was not going to be a question mark. It is a question mark. And, you know, looking ahead, although, really, again, they really can't because, you know, they got this season to worry about, you know. But looking ahead toward next year, oh, my gosh, with Grimes as a free agent, somewhere Brent Grimes' free his agent, and it might be Nico as his agent, is smiling. Because the Bucks can, even though he's 34 years old, right now the Bucks cannot afford to let Brent Grimes go.
You're in a weird situation, and it's not a good one. The player who's 34 has all the leverage, and you don't like giving contracts to 34-year-old corners. So
exactly. It's not a good situation. And Light's philosophy was, and he's done it several times, he's got a player in free agency and then followed up in the draft with a player at the same position, thinking that by the time the veteran, his contract runs out, the rookie who was drafted will have enough experience to fill that void. And so theoretically, Hargraves was supposed to fill the void when Grimes' contract went out. Well, you can't say that right now. That's a big-time leap in faith to suggest that.
Well, right, and, you know, at some point they'll just have to draft another corner. I mean, I think that's where we're at here. I mean, that's going to happen. Real quick, look ahead, because it's the Cardinals, and actually I think it's an interesting stretch for the Bucks. It's the NFL, so every game is an interesting game because you see bad teams beat good teams, and average teams look like world beaters, and terrible teams for a week can be a Super Bowl contender. It's just crazy league that you see every week. So I don't want to assume anything, but collectively, when you see – over the next, say, five games that you have the Cardinals and you have the Bills, Panthers, Saints, and Jets, you got to go 3-2 in this stretch, bare minimum, if we're going to be looking at the back half of this season. I mean, extend it if you want to the Dolphins, who are struggling too. So 6 games, go 4-2 over these next 6 games, I think has to be the goal. And this is an imminently winnable football game on the road.
Well, I absolutely agree. And you know what? If the Bucs think they're a playoff team, if they think they should be playing meaningful games in January, that means they're a good team. Good teams are supposed to beat bad teams. Cardinals are a bad team. Dolphins are a bad team. Bills are not a good team. Those are the games you're supposed to win. So this next stretch of games will say it all about if the Bucks have a playoff hopes or not. It really will. And you're exactly right, Jeff. The Bucks should go on the road and beat the Cardinals. They should. Now, if they don't, then, oh, my gosh. The Cardinals are reeling. If you're trading for an over-the-hill Adrian Peterson, that's a panic move. You've hit the panic button. You're officially panicking. So, and oh, by the way, Adrian Peterson is going to help the blocking up front for Carson Palmer. And if the Bucs can put pressure on Tom Brady, they should be able to put pressure on Carson Palmer. They should. So this is a winnable game, and if the Bucs think they're a playoff team, if the Bucs think they're a good team, this is the game they need to win. It's really that simple. I hate to use the word must until it's December, but it's pretty darn close to being a must-win.
Yeah, I understand why you feel that way. I get that sentiment. It's not technically a must-win game because you could always beat somebody nobody expects you to beat down the line, but I get it because good teams do beat bad teams, and you're right. When you look at the Cardinals, nothing about them says good football team. Lee, we'll talk next week. Good talking to you, brother.
Thanks again, Jeff. Appreciate it.
All right, take care. Yeah, the Cardinals, by the way, listen, they lose their first game of the year 35-23 to the Lions. We now know the Lions are pretty good, but we had no idea at the time. Then you go from there, they have to win in overtime against the Colts, and they have to win in overtime against the 49ers. Those are two wins. They've had to win in overtime against two of the sorriest-ass teams in this league. So the Bucks, by any definition, ought to walk in there, win the game. It's the NFL. Weird things happen. I imagine it'll be relatively close because, sweet Jesus, every game in the league is. Somebody will be within, you know, a possession in the fourth quarter, but a good team goes ahead and wins this game.
Well, I think the point at the end is a salient one, which is if they can get pressure on Tom Brady, they should be able to get pressure on Carson Palmer. Pressure is going to be the key here because, you know, if they don't have anything else, which they don't have much else at this point, Arizona does have speed weapons on the perimeter, and Larry Fitzgerald's Larry Fitzgerald.
Right.
So, to me, if you can get some sort of pressure on the quarterback, then you should be able to generate some more punts here. But if you cannot, well, then our secondary is exposed to good, to above average weapons across the board. I mean, that's one thing they do have.
Veteran players, yeah. I mean, look, the Giants haven't won a game yet this year, and this game comes down to a last-second drive at home to beat the Giants. So I'm not assuming anything. I'm just stating, you know, declaratively, that if you're good, you beat this team. But you're right. If Carson Palmer's allowed to sit around and throw to Larry Fitzgerald, well, you're going to have a problem.
Well, and I can understand, too, the fan that's listening to this and says, well, if you're good, you take the game the Patriots give you, and you're 3-1, and you know what?
Eh.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, that thing's on a platter.
Sure. I don't mind losing a game to Bill Belichick. I don't mind losing a game to Tom Brady. I mind not cashing in opportunities. But if we're looking at before the season, the schedule comes out, I penciled in L all day long against the Patriots. You thought they'd get killed by the Patriots.
I did, but so, if you promised me 19 points against before a kickoff, I would have said, my God, this might be a statement victory.
I agree. It's nice. You should probably get the win there. Games don't play out the way that we think every time. I'll just say again, before this game was played last week when we did the Scuttlebucks, we both had the Patriots winning with ease. You could look at it the other way is my only point. You could say, well, there they were hanging with the champions. They had the ball, throwing the ball into the end zone at the end of the game to get a win. If I had told you that before that game was played, you'd have taken that all day long. So I just think, yeah, I'm going to look at glass half full right now. With a team that has to mature, that has to get better and clean up some things in some areas, I'm still looking at them as a team growing towards something good as opposed to falling back to something bad. And so my assumption is they're going to go beat the Cardinals. I didn't pick them to beat Minnesota. I didn't pick them to beat the Patriots. I'm going to pick them to go on the road and beat the Cardinals. They don't do that, my tune changes, because we have overwhelming evidence that says at that point, my tune should change. But I think they go win this game. And here's the thing, Tom, that part of the schedule, it's Cardinals, Bills. Bills got a good defense. I'm not going to assume a win over the Bills. That could be a tough game. But you get Panthers at home, so it's a divisional game, great game. That should be a heightened up war. Saints are playing better. Can't assume anything there. But Jets, Dolphins before you get Falcons.
Yeah.
Got to beat the Jets and the Dolphins.
That Saints game is in New Orleans?
It is. Yeah. We play well there, though.
We always play well there.
For whatever reason, we play
well. Don't
always
win, but it's at least a close game, if not a victory.
And remember, we're now going into these games with a bona fide NFL running back. And I think that's a big damn deal.
That's huge.
That's this 2-2 through 4, which we said the first Scuttlebucks we ever did, that, hey, if you can get through this stretch without having an NFL running back on your roster, you'll take it, and you'll sing, and you'll move on. Now you got a guy. And I just challenged Dirk. If Jameis, for whatever reason, is having a stretch where he's not playing well, and sometimes he does that, especially early in games, for whatever reason, nerves, too much respect for the opponent or a player or a coach, whatever it might be, you now have a guy you could turn and hand the ball to, and please stick with that. I mean, even the best players and the best quarterbacks who have bad days like to have the luxury of falling back on a solid running game. And whether that's, you know, if you think about Big Ben, who just had a terrible game, needing to fall back on Bell, whomever it is, they usually do have that guy. And the Bucs get theirs back. Use him. This will probably be the last year you got him. Use him. Make it happen. And then, you know, you're going to have to go out and seek to fulfill that position in the draft or through free agency, something along those lines. Come back, wrap up the Scuttlebucks momentarily. Now when it came to the people.
Fire the cannons. Plant the daggers.
There's the dagger! There's the dagger!
The Scuttlebucks are back on JoeBucksFan.com. Here's Jeff Cameron and Tom Lang.
All right, so a quarter of the season is in the books. And on the first Scuttlebucks, we threw down with a little W's and L's, which we're fond of doing. We do that on my show. And if you would, Tom, go ahead and cue up the wonderful little liner. We'll do W's and L's through the next four games.
W's.
Wins.
All right. How you doing?
Losses.
Damn it. We lost. We f***ing super lost, man.
Where do we triumph? Where doth thou fall? W's and L's. I said before the year or at the start of the year, I thought we'd be 2-2. I think Tom was really optimistic and had us at 3-1, right?
Really optimistic, just a game difference. But yeah, I thought Minnesota game would go just a little bit differently. However, it did not.
No.
Minnesota's game was the worst effort of the four so far.
Yeah, it was an ass kicking. But no, and I don't mean that. I'm not taking shots at you, man. You don't have to be defensive. I'm saying that. Just you 3-1 is very optimistic. I mean, it's an NFL team that's not even made the playoffs in some time.
But the funny thing, well, they're over 500 last year. And the funny thing is that, you know, if you go back now and look at this revised after seeing what happened, they couldn't potentially should be 3-1 with the opportunities they had last Thursday that they did not take advantage of.
Yeah, but you know, buddy, we're in the middle of a battle between glass half full, half empty. They could have lost the Giants game very easily. So I will take my 2-2 and say I'm all right with 2-2, and let's see what happens next. We're at, as we were just mentioning with Lee DeKemper, that the next portion of the schedule is a lot of fun for us to do W's and L's with. Actually, the next six are even more fun. We're not going to cheat and do six, but I kind of want to do six. But let's do the next four games, and the Bucs are 2-2, and now we've got the Cardinals on the road. I think I've already hinted at what I think is going to happen there and what has to happen, frankly. Buccaneers go on the road on Sunday, October the 15th, 4:05 p.m. kick, baby. And they get the win going away, a comfortable 10-point victory for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, which in the NFL is a butt-stomping.
Well, if you have to go on the road and somewhat across the country, I know Arizona isn't on the other coast, but it's close enough.
Nice to do it well rested.
It would be a nice landmark game, too, because there's one to compare it to last season.
Ooh,
in Arizona.
Wasn't and pretty.
That was not pretty at all. So
opportunities early on the deep ball, well thrown by Jameis, I might add, that Evans, quote-unquote, lost in the lights.
There was one that he lost in the lights, and then there was another pick that he threw against five- or six-man pressure where Vincent Jackson doesn't turn around for the ball. Remember Vincent Jackson?
Oh, yes. I was beginning to question him at that point.
Yeah, yes.
That was hurtful. We like him to go on the road and beat the Cardinals, where I do anyhow. I've got the Bucs moving to 3-2.
It's a game you should win, but I'm going to be done predicting if it's going to be in the 30s or the 20s or, you know, 17-15.
Try to get a win.
Just get the damn win.
Just get a win. All right, so you predict a W, I assume?
Yes.
All right. At the Bills, and this is really the most critical of the four in a weird way. It's not, because it's not a divisional game, but the Bills are imminently beatable. They also happen to have a very good defense. And I don't think you can call this anything but a 50-50. I'm going to take the Buffalo Bills to beat the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and remain frustrated, we will, as the Bucs continue to remain middling.
I can see why you would do that, especially with the travel element. You're going across the country, you got to come back, then get on a plane, go up to Buffalo. And,
yeah,
and these things matter. Bettors know that. These things matter in the NFL. I just like what Tampa's run game can potentially be. So I think the Bucs, if Patrick Murray is not Nick Folk and he's not Roberto Aguayo, then you have a chance to go 2-0 in this next two-game stretch on the road.
Woo!
I'll pick Tampa Bay to beat Buffalo.
Okay.
There
okay.
we go. Move to 4-2 on the
wow.
season.
Wow. A little cushion. A little cushion for the Buccaneers. Then they're hosting the Carolina Panthers, which might surprise you. I just took the Bills to beat the Bucs. I'm going to turn right around and pick the Bucs to beat the Carolina Panthers. I think they get it done in a squeaker, 20-17.
This would be a pleasant surprise victory.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
After week two, you'd say, well, this is a W all day long.
Yeah.
And now you say,
probably going to be a loss.
This would be a pleasant surprise W. I'm going to go with an L for the Bucs against what looks to be a revitalized Carolina Panthers.
Well, the following week, speaking of revitalization, the Saints have somehow found a defense that has me gravely concerned. They're on the road against the Saints. But as we enter November, I don't know. I'm wrestling. I'm torn. I give us the L. Tough Woo! L on the road in New Orleans. Now, listen, here's what I'm willing to accept. What did I just do? 2-2 in the next four. I don't care how it has to be, 2-2. I don't care who the wins are. I'll take Tom's methodology, win the next two, lose the next two after that. I'll take any combination that you want to align. You got to go 2-2 in the next four. That's what I have the Bucs doing.
There is no doubt about that. I'll give him a W in this circumstance, though.
Ooh, 3-1.
Yes, the New Orleans Saints defense, I believe, is a little bit of smoke and mirrors, especially when you bring balance. We have balance in the force here, Jeff, with Doug Martin being back in the fold.
Yeah, no, I agree. Bucs could be a lot better football team.
It will be critical, though, over this four-game stretch, I think, one way or the other, that you have to get back Quan Alexander, and especially for that game, because the way
that
you know number two in targets is in the Saints? It's the running back, Kamara. That's partly the reason.
He's a really good player.
It's partly the reason that Adrian Peterson is now playing in Arizona.
Yeah.
So
Adrian sucks.
Well, yes, that too.
Yeah.
I would agree.
Yeah.
Everybody's kind of forgetting that point. They're skipping over that point.
Mm-hmm.
But to me, you got to have your linebackers back at full strength if you want to go 3-1 in the stretch. I think they will, and I think they do.
I think ultimately for the Bucs to get to where they want to go, which is the playoffs, and certainly to get to playoffs, you got to have a winning record. They're not going to achieve either if they don't get people back on defense. Levante David and Quan Alexander, obviously. Health will be critical. You're playing so many games in a row without the benefit of a bye week. You got to get these guys back. So I agree with you there. By the way, sneak peek, look ahead. You got Jets Dolphins after that. If the Tampa Bay Buccaneers are 3-1, that's what you're going with over these next four, and I like your prediction better than mine. If that's true, and the Bucs are sitting at 5-3 through eight games, and they've got the Jets and Dolphins on the horizon, well, start to get giddy and projecting ahead.
Well, okay, there's some hope in here. Obviously, you can't be completely unbiased. I mean, we're Bucs fans, and we're talking about this. And I was 3-1 first four games, and incorrect. 2-2, you were correct.
Well, I don't want to be correct this time. I want you to be right this time.
I'll come back around last time too.
I know. Well, I do think we'll be 2-2 over the next four. And I admit, because it's the oddity that is the NFL, the way in which we go 2-2 in these games, I have no idea. I mean, I understand why you took us to beat New Orleans. I get why you took us to beat the Bills.
Yeah.
And I think you don't think I'm crazy for picking the Bills.
No. I don't think you're crazy for picking us against the Panthers either.
Yeah.
Because that game's going to mean an awful lot. Ray J will be
I think it'll be a fun day. That's actually what I'm thinking.
But can we both agree on this? That if the pass rush looks something like it did against New England, it doesn't have to be that good, but if it looks something like it did.
And you have a running game with Doug Martin, and you're not having to give the ball to people that aren't NFL running backs or number one NFL running backs. Yes.
Then the division championship is in your crosshairs. But you've got to see a whole hell of a lot more before we get to that point.
We're getting all kinds of crazy up in here on the Scuttlebucks division championships.
That's why I said we need to see a whole hell of a lot more.
Lots of things have to happen. But all right. I will say this, the meaty part of your schedule, which is the sandwich here, right? The six games. We only did four there. These six games are going to tell the story.
Got to go 4-2.
I think you're probably right. I think you got to go 4-2 if you're going to make the playoffs. In fact, I would say that's almost 100% certain. These next six games, by hook or crook, doesn't matter how it gets done, who you beat, how you beat them, I don't care. You could win 6-3 or you could win 45-41. You got to go 4-2, and you got to get healthy. For Tom Lang, I'm Jeff Cameron. Thanks for listening to the Scuttle Bucks. We'll do it again next week. Hopefully, we're talking about the Bucks over 500 as we do so. Otherwise, oh, man, a lot of kicking and screaming on the Scuttlebucks next week if that happens. Damn it, don't be losing to Arizona, guys. It's Arizona's sorry ass.
Not again.
No, can't happen. So long. Have a great week.